Nicolet Bank is honored to support all who strive to make communities great. Newsmakers is a production of Wisconsin Eye. To keep programs like this free and accessible to all, please consider a charitable gift to wisi.org/donate or text WISI to 44321. This program is brought to you from Wisconsin Eye's Margaret Farrow Studio.
Hello, and welcome to Newsmakers. I'm your host, Lisa Pugh. Now that public hearings are complete, the Joint Finance Committee begins the hard work of crafting the biennial budget with the goal of being done by July 1st. Yet partisan disagreements over tax cuts, the impact of federal policies, and the state of the economy all have the potential to stall this year's timeline. Democrat members of the Finance Committee join us today for Newsmakers. We welcome Senator Kelda Royes and Representative Tip McGuire. Thank you for joining Newsmakers.
Good to be with you, Lisa.
Thanks for having us.
And welcome back to Wisconsin. I know last week you spent some time in Hayward and Wausau. Wisconsin Eye has been tracking the public hearing testimony across all four public hearings. And in those hearings, we are showing you some charts. That's a summary of testimony that you heard. This is the testimony from Hayward and Wausau. Similar to other hearings, education and health care were key topics. Corrections has also been showing up in each location. Up north, you maybe heard a little bit more about the environment. Senator Royes, what has been your biggest takeaway across all of the public hearings?
Well, I would say the biggest takeaway is that people overwhelmingly want our public schools to be funded. They believe that our kids deserve investment, and they're really frustrated that Republicans in Madison haven't done the job and forced, in fact, property taxpayers to raise their own property taxes repeatedly just to keep the lights on. Couple that with their refusal to fund early childhood education and the crisis in affordable childcare that's plaguing most of the state, we've got a real demand from the public to invest in our kids.
Representative McGuire, was there a key theme that you heard in the hearings?
I agree with Senator Royes. I mean, from West Allis to Wausau, from Hayward to Kaukauna, big school districts, little school districts, urban school districts, rural school districts, they all agree that the state needs to be investing more into public education as they've all struggled. And some of them have been able to pass referendums and some of them haven't. But the message from all of them remain the same, that the state needs to be putting more investment into public schools to help them succeed.
Republicans have been focused on tax cuts. They say that's their top priority in this biennial budget. What did you hear about tax cuts in those public hearings?
The only thing we heard is that people don't want more tax cuts. They want a state that's worth living in.
Nobody actually said that in the testimony.
Yes, one woman was talking about schools and transit, and she said, I don't want another tax cut. I want a state that's worth living in. And I think that is clear and consistent what we heard. The Republicans have been for years trying to push more tax cuts and tax breaks, but for the extremely wealthy, for millionaires, for billionaires, for big corporations. And they're doing it at the expense of our local communities, our kids, our municipalities, and our higher ed system. It's not working, and it's not what the people want.
We know Republican leaders have been meeting with Governor Evers around the topic of tax cuts. What type of a tax cut proposal would you like to see within the budget?
Well, look, one of the things I was really pleased to see that the governor did in his budget was that he provided additional property tax support and relief for a lot of people, especially given that so many communities have been forced by legislative Republicans to raise their own property taxes in order to fund public education. We believe we should be able to give back some of that money and to support property tax payers now, because we are going to hopefully make the meaningful investments in public education. So that problem won't come in the future, but too many of them are still paying for the failure of legislative Republicans in the past.
Well, we know that's not where the Republicans are on tax cuts. Where do you think the middle ground is on taxes?
Well, you know, I think we need to make sure that, number one, it happens inside the budget process. Number two, we should not be doing any tax cuts that could be irresponsible in creating a future deficit, right? We have a lot of unmet needs. For 16 years, the kids in our public schools have not even seen an inflationary increase. We have cut hundreds of millions of dollars from public higher ed over the years. Now all these chickens are coming home to roost. So we have a surplus on paper, but that doesn't really reflect the fact that we have been underinvesting in all of these core public services, like local governments, for years on end. And we have to start putting some money back into these critical public services before we start talking about additional tax cuts.
Do you think maybe this is a budget where there shouldn't be any tax cut at all?
Well, I mean, I'm open to doing it as part of a responsible package, but I'm not open to what the Republicans continually propose, which is a tax cut that is overwhelmingly beneficial to the wealthiest among us and that will create a massive structural deficit that makes it impossible for us to make those investments that, frankly, taxpayers expect and deserve.
We had the Republican co-chairs of the Finance Committee in here 2 weeks ago, and they expressed some pessimism about the numbers they expect from the Fiscal Bureau coming in mid-May, the number of tax revenues that they expect to be coming in. They say it's a year for belt tightening. Do you agree with that? Is this a year for belt tightening in the biennial budget?
Well, I think it's interesting when we're talking about the economy. I guess there's two points that I would make initially here. First, that they're considering and they're looking at potentially the economy slowing down, and they're using that as a justification for belt tightening. But it was just 10 days ago that they were trying to make it harder for people to access their earned unemployment benefits if the economy does go south. I think it's interesting that they change the talking point based on the outcome that they want each time. But the most important point I think we should make is to remind ourselves that the potential for an economic downturn here is ultimately inflicted on us by Republicans. Republicans in Congress who refused to do their job, by a Republican president, and that so much of this pain could have been avoided if they had acted responsibly. Now, they could send a letter right now. They could reach out to the president. He's a Republican. They're Republicans. They have that. I think they'd be more persuasive than either you or I would here.
We've sent letters.
Yes.
Are you pessimistic about the state of the economy in Wisconsin, Senator Royce?
Well, I think it's very scary to see a Republican regime that's willing to set the world's economy on fire, to basically set our trade policy using ChatGPT, to do mass firings of people, to treat our dollar like it's something that we should be devaluing. The economic impact of the Republican administration is devastating. There are small businesses across this country that are having to close their doors because of this ridiculous tariff policy that has no basis in rational economic theory. People are in pain.
And so when they're saying that they're worried about, you know, having to tighten the belt, why don't they help us alleviate those problems now? Why aren't we reaching out to the president? Why aren't they reaching out to the president? Why aren't legislative Republicans coming out and saying, we're disappointed in President Trump's economic policies and we think it's going to harm Wisconsin? But instead, they're going to use it as a justification now to cut programs that people want to see, that people have been across the state requesting from us and asking us to fund, that they have failed to fund for nearly 15 years now.
So in this economic climate, what does responsible budgeting look like? If there is this looming news from the federal government, what does it look like to be responsible?
Well, it looks like making sure that the pain that families and our small businesses are experiencing is first and foremost on our minds, that we're not doing anything to raise the price of groceries. That's why things like healthy school meals for all that will help people's bottom lines, I think, are so important.
$1,800.
Yeah, right. $1,800.
Family with kids in school. That's how much they would save on groceries. Absolutely. Yeah. I think that there's a lot of common sense proposals that Governor Evers has put in to his budget that would make things easier on people. And think, we're talking about, okay, they're saying, presumably they're saying, oh, the times may be hard for working families coming up. So, we're gonna talk about our tax cut. Well, Governor Evers already has a tax cut in his package, and it's on property taxes, which is a very high cost for a lot of people, and housing. The cost of housing is very high for a lot of people. And it just so happens to be an area where people have been forced into a bad position because of legislative Republicans. So why can't we give them that property tax support so they can save some money, as well as investing in the programs that benefit working families in the middle class?
Senator Royce, you brought up the issue of tariffs. I know Fiscal Bureau Director Bob Lang has said he'll be looking closely at the impact of tariffs on Wisconsin in terms of inflation and in tax collections. You know, many experts say that Wisconsin's economy is in the top 10 in terms of their exposure to certain tariffs. I'm wondering, I know that Democrats held a press event at a ginseng farm in Marathon County, kind of addressing this issue. Well, how do you feel that tariffs will impact the budget directly this time around?
Well, we're already seeing a huge impact on Wisconsin businesses and families. When you think about the big ticket items like housing, where we have a huge housing shortage in areas all across the state, we are a manufacturing state, we are an agriculture state, and we're a tourism state. Those are our top three industries. Every single one of those is being devastated by the Republican administration's policies coming out of Washington. And it's not just the cost of the tariffs, it's also the uncertainty. Right? I mean, what do you need if you're a family and you're trying to decide, should I go back to school? Should I take a different job? You know, can I afford to send my kids to college? You have to have certainty. Businesses need that too. And what we have seen from the Republican administration is no certainty. It's different based on what he ate for breakfast in the morning. And that is having a horrible impact on our farmers.
Do you agree that those Fiscal Bureau numbers you'll be getting in mid-May might be showing an impact from tariffs already?
Yeah, I absolutely believe they could. I mean, I had a listening session in Kenosha with my constituents, and one woman told me a pretty remarkable story where basically several years ago, she left the workforce because they as a family couldn't afford childcare anymore. And now her husband's company is talking about cutting back employees because the components that they use to make their product is now significantly more expensive, and so they don't believe they'll be able to continue with the employees that they have. And so if you think about this, the Republican administration is not only undermining people's jobs and our economy, but also Republicans in the legislature have failed to support them in childcare. And so this whole family went from being, you know, 3 years ago, 2 years ago, to being a two-income household to being a zero-income household potentially. And I think that's going to be devastating to a lot of people. It's going to be very harmful. And how are families supposed to be able to survive in an environment that is marked only by chaos, corruption, and confusion?
Last week, the Department of Health Services also held an event talking about the potential impacts on Wisconsin of federal funding changes. They say over a 10-year period that Wisconsin could lose up to $16.8 billion in federal Medicaid funding. How can the state even prepare for a potential change of that size? How can we prepare now, I should say?
Well, I think the first thing we should do is look at the big irresponsible tax giveaways to big corporations that have been enacted over the last 15 years, because that takes a big chunk out of our budget. It's also really unfortunate that we never expanded Medicaid, because we would have had billions more in state taxpayer dollars plus federal revenue coming in that could have helped us to soften the blow. But that said, these cuts to Medicaid that Republicans are proposing are going to devastate families in every part of the state. It's, you know, especially in rural areas. It's going to mean the massive closure of hospitals of last resort, just like we've seen in western Wisconsin. And that's going to mean families left without any health care at all.
Republicans say those potential cuts to Medicaid are something to consider in the future. They're an uncertainty, something that they will use a wait and see approach to. Do you consider those cuts an uncertainty, or do you think that preparation is important, like this week as you start budget deliberations?
I think preparation is always important, especially given the chaos that we've seen on the federal level. But I also think that this is another example of something that legislative Republicans can have some say in. It's a Republican-controlled Congress that is proposing cuts to Medicaid. And so they should reach out to their federal representatives and let them know, look, this is going to devastate Wisconsin's budget if you go forward with it, and we'd ask you to please not do that. They have say in this. They have power. And they're not using it. And instead, they're pretending as though this is just one of those things that happens. But in reality, a Republican administration and a Republican Congress are potentially cutting people's benefits, and that would devastate Wisconsin's budget. And so Republican legislators here should be reaching out to their federal representatives and letting them know that they don't want to see that.
Should Medicaid be a piece of the budget that's pulled out and dealt with separately in order to completely account for that federal uncertainty? Is that maybe an exception to the rule of doing the budget as a whole package?
Well, I think that would actually make things a little bit more complicated, right? Because it's very, very hard to know what you can afford to do to support people on Badger Care if you don't know how much money you're going to have, right? And I think that's part of the problem with chopping things up into different chunks and saying, well, let's just deal with transportation or let's just deal with healthcare, is you're really not seeing the full picture. And, you know, That is why we really need to be thoughtful and responsible, especially when it comes to the revenue side of things.
Democrats have said that K-12 education, you've said here today, that's a top priority for you. We know the state Supreme Court recently upheld Governor Evers' veto, that 400-year veto that extended property tax levy limits for school districts. Do you think that that veto decision will impact how much spendable resources Republicans are willing to put into public education this time?
I would hope not. I would hope that they would recognize that 15 years of their failing to invest in public schools is the reason why it was the number one issue that people were concerned about, that we heard from rural school districts and urban school districts and school districts that are small and some that are big and some that passed referendums and some that didn't. And they all came and they said, we need you to invest more money in our public schools. And so I don't think that a disagreement with the governor between Republican politicians should really impact whether kids have an opportunity to go to a good school.
School districts have been going to referendum mm-hmm. at greater frequency. The Wisconsin Policy Forum says property taxes will be increased by the greatest amount since 2009. Don't you think that that veto extension opens the door for even higher property taxes for property tax owners?
Well, what's incredible about the referenda is that it is property taxpayers who are voting themselves to raise their own taxes because they prioritize their kids having good schools. And they know that when you have good schools in an area, it also helps the property values, right? So taxpayers and voters across the state are being loud and clear that they want Republicans in the legislature to do their job. For 16 years, our kids have not had an inflationary increase. That is unacceptable. They are guaranteed a free public education, a quality public education by our Constitution, and the legislature has not been providing that. So, we rely too heavily on the property tax in the state. There's no question about that. And we should not be pitting local property taxpayers and schools against each other. That, too, is a very negative consequence of the Republicans' refusal to do their job and actually fund schools at the state level.
So the extension of that veto should not be blamed for increased property taxes.
Not if it's Republicans have the opportunity to fund that to make sure it doesn't do that. So they should take it.
Democrats seem somewhat surprised in the last biennial budget when there was the Governor Evers agreed to a historic increase in funding for choice schools, the voucher school system. Do you expect another increase for choice schools in this budget?
Absolutely not. And I think that should be a non-starter. The idea that we should continue to fund two different systems of school, one public that serves everyone, that's available to everyone, one private that can proselytize, that can exclude and discriminate against students and teachers, and that, by the way, doesn't actually show any better results than the public schools, I think taxpayers know that that is wrong for Wisconsin. It is wrong when private schools get 90% reimbursement for special education and our public schools don't even get 30%, right? That's totally inequitable. And it's a big reason why our public schools have been starved of the resources that they deserve is because they've been taken out and funneled into these private, unaccountable voucher schemes.
The choice school system has been asking for decoupling or pulling their funding out of the public school funding structure and making it a separate GPR line item. Is that something you would support?
Not right now. I'm certainly not convinced that that's necessary, but I will say it's interesting that they're asking for something like that, and legislative Republicans are saying that we have to tighten our belt when it comes to GPR dollars. Does that include decoupling? Does that include voucher schools and the reimbursement rate that they receive from the state? I wonder.
Corrections has been a big theme across all the hearings, particularly in Northeast Wisconsin. I know the governor has proposed some criminal justice reforms, the eventual closure of Green Bay Correctional. Is that an area for bipartisan agreement? What does the corrections package look like to you?
I mean, I would hope so. Like, it is clear that this package is long overdue, and it is very welcome. Our state on any given day incarcerates 2 to 3 times as many people as our neighbor Minnesota does. And I don't think Wisconsinites are 2 to 3 times as bad as Minnesotans. It is bankrupting us, and it is depriving us of the resources we need to put into other things like making sure every kid grows up in a safe neighborhood. So to me, there's a lot to like in this plan. It is by far the safest, the easiest, and the cheapest and the fastest way to modernize our correctional system and bring it into line with evidence-based practices that put public safety at the forefront of our goals. And that's really what it should be.
Republican leaders have said that the governor's plan is lax on public safety. Do you think there's a middle ground on a corrections plan? Is this a potential big bipartisan win in this budget, similar to what shared revenue was in the last biennial budget?
I'm hopeful that it will be. I will say what legislative Republicans defined as the more appropriate response earlier this year was to just start building new prisons, which could take 10, 12 years. I think that the Department of Corrections has worked very hard to make sure that this is something that will ensure public safety, but that'll also, you know, be cost effective and allow us to, you know, start investing in the things that make our community safer in the long run, not just the short run.
Democrats have been supportive of the UW system's $855 million request. While Republicans have questioned, there's declining birth rates, declining enrollment. How do you justify support for that request in light of those declining student numbers?
Well, what we know is that a college education is incredibly important for people in having a stable economic life. And the universities of Wisconsin are by far our number one economic engine in the state. Every dollar we invest, we get dozens of dollars back in economic activity. Also, the universities have seen massive cuts over the last 15 years, and even if you look over the past four decades, we have seen declining state support. The universities have done a great job of stepping up charitable contributions, donations, and of course tuition increases, but it's no substitute for state support. And if you look at those cuts, really all we're doing is we're trying to ask for the university to be back towards a more reasonable level that they were before the devastating Walker era cuts.
And honestly, I want to push back on the premise of that question. And I want to say, can we phrase it maybe a little bit more accurately, which is that in the 15 years since legislative Republicans have starved the UW system, Wisconsin has gotten older. That the UW system has long been something that we use to attract people to Wisconsin, that we use to bring in workforce, that we use to make sure that working families that want to be here know that their kid can access a high-quality education, because there are lots of great opportunities for people to make their way into the workforce, and some of them involve the university and some of them don't. But for a lot of parents, knowing that the university is an option to them and that it's a well-funded institution that has, frankly, long been the pride of Wisconsin, is something that kept people here and that made them feel confident that they could raise their family here. And since they've started starving it, Wisconsin has gotten older. And so I think that we can reverse that trend by investing in things like the UW system, investing in our public schools, and making sure working families know that they can succeed here and that their kids can succeed here.
I want to do some rapid fire through a few more issues before our time is up. I'm going to start with child care. I'll start with you. The governor and DCF released a survey saying that child care centers close to closure without additional state assistance. Republicans have said no to child care counts before, so I don't know if there's hope that they would support it this time around. Are there other solutions around child care?
Look, child care counts is a supply-side solution to a supply-side problem, right? The problem is that we do not have providers that can succeed, that can bring in the employees that they need, that can pay those employees at a rate that's high enough that people will choose to be in childcare. And so they have space that's going unused. We have the capacity to give kids and families childcare in the state, but we frankly don't have the workers, and we need to be able to pay workers.
Is childcare counts the only solution? Senator Mark Klein said incentives for employers would be a better solution.
I'm sure that there's other possible ways of looking at this, but I'll say this about childcare counts. The number one reason that we support it is because we know it works. We've done it. It's a program that has already succeeded through the pandemic and afterwards. It's been succeeding this whole time, and the childcare providers are telling us that when that goes away, this summer, if they don't pass a budget that includes it in there, that a lot of facilities are either going to shut down or dramatically raise their rates. And both of those are bad outcomes.
On health care, you've talked about affordable health care as a priority. In Wausau, Senator Tustin also said affordable health care in rural communities was a priority or a need for him. Is there a middle ground on affordable health care, do you think, with Republicans?
Well, I mean, I think everyone in the state wants and deserves affordable health care. I think the question is, how do you get it? And, you know, we've seen Republicans voting again to refuse to act on prescription drug costs, to refuse to expand access to health insurance, refuse to do things that will make health care more affordable and accessible for people and help people when their insurance company causes problems for them. So, you know, we'll see how much of a crisis it has to be before Republicans are willing to act.
Are you expecting the budget to get done on time this year?
No.
Why would you say no?
I just don't feel as though legislative Republicans have really shown the urgency in protecting our budget priorities and in communicating about what their vision is. I think it's interesting. I mean, at the beginning of the year, right, and they continue to talk about their tax cut. They said this is the number one priority, and they even saved SB1. To introduce it as, and yet I don't think there's an SB1 to this day, right? I think we've got an SB205, SB206, you know, over 200 other bills have been introduced, and yet they've yet to get this top priority of theirs agreed upon and introduced. And so I wonder, what can they agree upon? What can they actually functionally put together, pen to paper, and get done?
Yeah. Do you think some of those federal impacts will delay getting the budget done on time?
I think they might be used as an excuse, but I don't think that will be the reason. I think the reason is, frankly, when Republicans lost so many seats in both houses of the legislature, the politics of trying to pass the budget got much more difficult. They have never been inclined to sit down with Democrats to try to hammer out some of the bipartisan solutions that I think you would love to see. And that's made it very, very difficult for them because they don't have any margin for error. And they've got a number of members of their caucus that will say no to everything. Anything and everything. And so how are they going to get the numbers to pass a budget on time when they won't even respond to sort of the most basic needs that people have said this is our priority?
I want to ask you both about the Democratic Party. It's not very popular right now. Polls show that people are a little disgruntled with the Democratic Party nationally. What does the Democratic Party need to do in order to regain trust and momentum?
Well, I think that the wave of the future is the wave of the past. I think that the number one thing that unifies Democrats across this country and has for over 100 years is our support for working families and the middle class, and I think that we need to talk about that more. I think most people are concerned about the state of our economy. I think they're concerned about their ability for their kids to succeed and do better. I think they're concerned about their ability to be able to go to the doctor and get medicine if they're sick. And so I think that Democrats should be constantly talking and thinking about public education, and access to affordable health care and good-paying jobs that allow people to retire and enjoy their lives.
Have Democrats been doing enough on those issues to resonate with people?
Well, I think Democrats have prioritized those issues, but, you know, Democrats have not had unified power very much. And I think the challenge is, how do you show progress when Democrats finally get control, all they're able to do is sort of clean up the economic mess that Republican administrations have left behind? You know, here in Wisconsin, Democrats have been very clear. We are the party of funding your public schools. We are the party of childcare. We're the party of lowering costs on housing and prescription drugs and childcare. And if we have power, we're going to do those things. And by the way, we're also going to protect your right to access abortion and make your own health care decisions. Republicans are not. Now, we're going to see, now that we have more competitive maps, so far it seems like voters like what we're having to offer. And, you know, I'm hopeful that in 2 years we're going to have a majority and we can have a very different conversation about the budget that Wisconsinites deserve.
Who's the leader of the Democratic Party nationally, or who's on your short list of who should be emerging as a leader?
I mean, I obviously, if we're talking about who's the leader of the party, I think you would obviously look to congressional leaders. They're certainly in positions of power and authority within the party itself. But I think there are a lot of exciting people who are across the country who are
emerging.
Who's on
your list?
I mean, I think I really like Pete Buttigieg. If you just want me to give you a name, I like Pete. He's a smart guy. He's got a good sense of humor.
Young kids.
Who's on the top list?
I mean, I love our governors. I think J.B. Pritzker, Gretchen Whitmer. You know, we have a lot of talent throughout the country, and I think, you know, what people see Democrats standing up and fighting and saying no to the authoritarian bent of the Republican administration, people are cheering. And, you know, in every corner of the state, I mean, I was just in Sheboygan, and there were hundreds of people out protesting this weekend. And it's just great to see that, you know, people want Democrats to stand up, and when we do, we get votes, and the people are with us.
You brought up governors. Do you think Governor Evers is in it for a third term?
Yes, I do.
And he should be?
Yes.
What do you think about Governor Evers for a third term?
Well, I think, you know, traditionally two terms has been plenty for a lot of Wisconsin governors, but, you know, he's going to decide what he wants to do.
And we will see. We'll have to have you back. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
And thank you to the viewers of Newsmakers. Be sure to tune in again as we highlight the issues and sit down with the decision makers who make a difference for all of us.
Nicolet Bank is honored to support all who strive to make communities great. You have been watching a production of Wisconsin Eye, your unfiltered window into legislative deliberations and public policy programming. where our mission is to provide Wisconsinites an opportunity to access the legislative process and connect with conversations that inform our citizenry. Please consider supporting our mission, and thank you for watching. Wisconsin Eye, policy made public.